Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Sarah LeDuc. Low is a British folk band from both Scotland and England, formed in 2005. They're playing the Freshgrass Festival at Mass Mocha this Saturday. The trio is Chris Drever, Martin Green, and Aidan O'Rourke. Low are fearless innovators, a lauded band that never stands still. They're creating some of the best music being made anywhere, in any genre.
I lost myself down the water road. I took myself to the ocean. Sure, when I woke, I'd be by myself. Shook from sleep by the motion of the breathing body beside my own. As the sun lengthens our shadow. In this new place I call my home, where we bless the light when it comes. I brought my music into this house. It had to happen sometime. I lost the urge to be by myself through the short nights and the winter.
Chris Drever joins us now. Chris, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
So have you ever played in Western Massachusetts before?
Never, no.
You're playing a bluegrass festival, which you, as a musician, fit into bluegrass, sort of. Could you give everybody sort of an idea for the kind of music you create and how you create it with the band Low?
Yeah, well, we play music is based on the traditional music from Scotland, where we're based, where we come from, which obviously has a lot of links with bluegrass music and old-time music. And we play a kind of progressive version of that thing, which fits in with the bluegrass itself. Is quite a progressive genre. You know, it's one of these where it was a modern kind of music, I guess, and always moving. So I think, you know, we fit into that kind of both ends of the spectrum there, the traditional end and the progressive end.
You're a solo artist, but you also perform, of course, with the group. How did you meet Martin and Aidan and begin playing together?
Well, I mean, we were all playing with different groups, but we were based in Edinburgh. That scene at that time was quite vibrant. There was a lot of different musicians mixing with one another and different styles and everything. So, of course, we would see each other, you know, on the circuit, different festivals and things like that, as part of different bands. But oftentimes it seems like we would end up playing together in bars in Edinburgh and things like that. And we had a kind of similar outlook on music and what constituted fun, I suppose. So that's kind of how it happened.
As you create music with the group or alone or with other people you're going to play with, when you come up with a melody or a lyric, how do you decide which part of your career it will go toward, which group it's for?
Well, I don't, there's not like a, that's very rarely an entirely, what's the word, calculated decision. It seems like the things very often have, you know, the different projects have a kind of vibe or a sort of indescribable character of their own. And so it's usually, it's pretty obvious when you're making pieces of music or have artistic ideas, where their home is. It seems to be the kind of, they have little signposts on them saying, put me here, you know.
Mm-hmm. I watched a video online that was made while you were recording your most recent Low album, The Bell That Never Rang, and there was a thing in the video that was sort of a plank of wood, a piece of lumber, with forks and spoons sticking out of it and sort of maybe synthesizers attached. And I just wanted to ask you, what was that?
Well, that's the Sporkatron.
Of course.
which is an instrument of Martin's devising. It's a sample triggerer. It's got looping capabilities, live looping capabilities and sample looping capabilities. And he's actually, at the moment, we're touring with a sort of Sporkatron Mark II, which is, I don't know, it's like a frame for a painting with a lot of strings strung across it. And I mean, it has, it performs a lot of the same things that the Sporkatron did, but it's, it has this extra heart-like quality going on. So sometimes we all gather around it and bow it and various things. It's a sort of, it's a textural generator, so in addition to all the sort of more traditional instrumentation, you know, these there are these other layers going on, which are usually generated by the instrument, it must be said, but ultimately controlled from that piece of lumber.
That album was produced by Joan Wasser, a.k.a. Joan as Policewoman. How did you meet up and what did she bring to the recording process, to the production of that album?
Well, we met up back in 2006. I got a solo record deal with Reveal Records, which led to Lau also ending up on Reveal Records. And Joan was the first act that Reveal signed. I think my first solo tour was supporting Joan. So I've known her for about 10 years or so. And we've met her through some festivals that Lau put on around the UK, collectively called Lauland.
Mm-hmm.
She was one of the acts that we brought over to play there. And of course, she's an amazing human force. So we were all very taken with her and got to hang with her a little bit and found out more about, you know, what she was up to, and a conversation sort of transpired where it seemed like it would be a great idea to have her come and help us make a record. So it was really just one of these things that grew out of us asking her to come and play at our festival, you know.
What was the impetus for you creating your own festival? What made you guys want to also be festival curators and invent Lauland?
Just the desire to see different things happen. You know, the same thing that has us writing music as a trio, really. It's sort of things that we think we would like to happen that don't currently happen. That's probably where it would file a lot of Lau's musical output and creative output, and then so subsequently our sort of festival vision, you know.
Your father is also a musician. Was there ever a point in your life when you weren't going to follow in his footsteps, or did you ever, you know, go to business school or anything?
No, I was pretty keen on music from my mid-teens. Yeah, I got a guitar when I was 13, and that was kind of, I lost interest in most of the other things in the in the world for a good many years after that, so... Yeah, I think there is a sense of inevitability now looking back, but it still feels like I had to do quite a lot of work to get to a point where I could make a living from it. Practicing, all those sorts of things that nobody really wants to do. But yeah, no, there's a definite kind of a family business feel about it, yeah.
Do you ever perform together or write together?
Not really. We've done one or two gigs. I live in the Shetland Islands and my dad lives in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And although they're next to each other on the map, they're not really that easy to travel between.
Sure.
So he did come and do a show here in Shetland maybe a year or two ago, and I got up and did a couple of numbers with him. But because we live in different countries and because we're touring all the time, we might see each other once a year if we're lucky. So we don't have a lot of time to work out stuff together, really. But it's great. Times I've played with them have been really, really enjoyable. Yeah.
Since you are touring all the time, how have you adapted to that? How does one get used to it and used to being on the road and used to being away from home so often?
The key word, I think, is acceptance.
Uh-huh.
it's really, you know, if you spend all your time going, this is terrible, I need to be at home, I've got a load of admin to do, I haven't seen my child or my wife for months, you know, that's going to make things really difficult. I mean, I don't go away for months. Since I became a dad, I stopped doing that. So, you know, I've got a maximum amount of time that I'll leave the house for, and that really helps. But also, you have to look around and go, well, these people here go to work every day in the same office from 9 o'clock until 5 o'clock. Monday to Friday, and they do that all year round, and they maybe have a couple of weeks holiday, And if you, you know, I'm maybe 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, a week on, a week off, 2.5 weeks on, 3 weeks off. You know, who actually gets to see their kids more? Who spends more time at home? And I suspect it's probably me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or at least more time with my family. I'm not just making tea, doing the dishes, and putting them to bed. So that's one of the ways I justify it to myself.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, yeah, you have to. If this is what you're going to do for a living, then you have to accept all the parts of the job, the good bits and the bad bits.
If you have time when you're at Fresh Grass, you will be right on the grounds of Mass MoCA, which is a fantastic contemporary art museum, and you know, wander around a bit. It's really crazy and excellent. I highly recommend it.
Oh, thank you very much. I most certainly will.
Thank you very much for joining me today, and have a wonderful time on your tour.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for talking to me.
Chris Drever of Lau. The band is playing at Fresh Grass at Mass MoCA this Saturday. The songs in this segment are from their most recent album, The Bell That Never Rang, available from Reveal Records. Fresh Grass takes place at Mass MoCA in North Adams, Massachusetts this Friday through Sunday. For more information, visit freshgrass.com or massmocha.org. Those links will be posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.